Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Ronan O'Gara, there is no escaping you. Hello.
It's 3 days in a row, which is great.
It's great. It's great not to do it in makeup.
Hadn't thought about that, yeah. But this is an exciting time. People asked me about that this morning. I was doing a questions and answers with Sofco, and they said, you're busy. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a great opportunity to get over, watch the rugby, and then go back and coach.
Mm. When are you going back to coach? Should you not be there today, no?
No, we've given our players 10 days off. So that's the players. I've been tipping away most days, obviously, because you're never really off. Mm-hmm. It's that's the beauty of the coach and the difference with the players. When you're a player, you have to be off, but when you're in management, it's sure so much gets done now on the laptop and on the phone. So yeah, but it's good to get out of your bubble too, and see different things and chat to different people, and no better people than the Irish.
So have you switched off, for instance, this weekend? And we're going to talk about this weekend, obviously. Are you on your phone and thinking about La Rochelle and thinking about different bits and bobs and watching video, even all that stuff, are you?
No, more so, there's 40-odd players you need to connect with, and there's management as well. So that's an ongoing process, an ongoing, not challenge, but you need to be over that, because it's about management now. And tactics is one bit of it, but it's kind of so much more to it than the playing side of it.
Would you be at a point where you would know of those 40 people who have children, how many they have, what's going on in their lives? That would strike me as a lot of information to be on top
of. Yeah, that is very, and it's amazing when you actually ask kind of your players, what are the three things that make them happy? So much of it comes back being kind of having a happy family.
You ask them that, do you?
Yeah, I think that's very important. Because it's something that I've learned as a player. I found with outside coaches coming into Munster, for example, you always have to respect the past. Mm. You always have to, because there's, before their arrival date, there's been history. So with players' performance levels, for the first 2 months of the current coach, they might be off for a reason, but what has happened the 8 years previous? So for me, it's very important to, there's always a background to something, there's always a past history, a current, and there'll be a future. So I need to understand as much as I can about, what this player has done for the club and how can I get more out of them.
It's a very interesting approach, because I heard Eddie O'Sullivan speaking just last week. He was on the House of Rugby show on Joe.ie, and Gerry Flannery said to him, Eddie, you were a bit standoffish with us, a little bit cool, the opposite to what you're talking about. Eddie certainly wasn't asking the players, are you happy or what makes you happy? And his answer, though, was very interesting. He said, in retrospect, I regret it a little bit, for sure. But he said, my logic at the time was this. Say, in your instance, I have 40 players. So I can't, if I'm going to be on good terms with players and joking with players and getting to know them and everything, I can't do that fairly and evenly across everybody. And players will, they do a stock take, and they know what's going on. They'll know, well, geez, he's always talking to those 5'10" lads. Mm. And so his attitude was, well, rather than create any resentment or be accused of favouritism, I'm going to treat everyone fairly and at a distance. But in retrospect, maybe he regretted it. But I thought it was a very interesting answer.
And it is, and I think you have to, obviously, the international game is very different to the club game. I'm a club coach, so I'm with these people a lot. Yeah. I have to find time, Joe. You just have to. And there isn't enough time, but you've got to remember that even 3 minutes with one guy could change his mood. Giving him that 3 minutes of, even if he probably doesn't like what you have to say, sometimes he'll respect it in the long run. And he just wants to be kind of given a little bit of honest feedback on the go, because if that's the case, then you're always making an excuse, well, I can't get around to everyone, but that means you can't get around to anyone. So I have to, that's how people grow, is feedback. So you have to have continuous. There's, as you say, there's the team forum for that, which is the review or the preview, but there's also, it's important that you, it's the non-farmer moments that are more important, maybe around the kind of coffee machine. That's where the spontaneous, real conversations happen that might actually, someone will say, and you can actually hold that and bring it up in a team environment so he can discuss his point. Because the good thing with La Rochelle, there's a lot of probably strong opinions from older French players, which is good. And the worst thing is people with kind of, as they say, beaucoup de caractère, you know, this guy has a lot of character, which means he has strong views, but you prefer that than someone who's not strong on something.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was the most important thing that kind of Razor said to me in the Crusaders, you got to connect with your players.
Mm. Turning to the weekend, because our time here is relatively short. So Ireland 19, Scotland 12, general, you know, best case scenario, really, I think people were a little bit underwhelmed while acknowledging he's only had 5 sessions, Andy Farrell, to try and start some kind of revolution. It was hard to be too buoyed based on that performance.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I didn't, having slept on it a little bit, it was a big day for Johnny Sexton too as a captain to get 19 points. I think I was going back in my head. That's, I think, sometimes underappreciated. You need your 10 scoring a lot of points. That's a great day at the office for him. And he will get better, but I think once you have that, and that means that he's inspired by the captaincy, I think it would be remiss of me not to
mention that.
Yeah,
fair
because
enough.
19 is a lot. What'll, I suppose, frustrate both coaching groups would be one try in a Six Nations game on a good pitch, good conditions to play. But the defences were really good. I think Scotland have been reinvigorated by Tandy. I think his defence coach is very, very good. They played with a lot of backbone.
Because our worry is that, okay, Scotland, maybe they are a bit improved in defence, but the theme of last year, and maybe a little bit beyond, was we can be short on tries way too often and short on creativity. So accepting that Scotland were a bit improved, that old Irish failing of not being creative enough still felt like it was hanging around for sure.
Yeah. It's hard to argue with that, I think. There was patches of it when they kicked up a gear, but the gear wasn't maintained for long enough, I felt. I think you look at the way France started yesterday, for example, from the off their tempo, that looked an awful lot, because looking at it this morning, you could see the first 10 minutes of the Ireland-Scotland game compared to the England-France game, the tempo seemed a lot higher in Stade de France. And I know Scotland owned the ball for 5 minutes, but they were very accurate for the first 5 minutes. Ireland will need to start better against Wales and implement their game from the off.
Mm.
But it's it's very, very dangerous sometimes between overplaying your hand 20, 30 metres from your line and getting that right. But at the minute, if you box kick, you need to get the ball back.
We box kicked a lot as well.
Correct.
Like a lot. Is there any worry here? You sort of alluded to this point over the weekend where you said, like a lot of players in this team, and at test level as well we're talking about, have always had the Joe Schmidt framework. So they have experienced test level rugby with that comfort of knowing what to do, when to do it, all laid out for them almost. And now we're entering this terrain where one, we have a 34-year-old, brilliant out half, but he's 34 and there's a transition happening. And now the Joe Schmidt plan is gone. And suddenly we have to see what can these guys do at test level without that framework.
Yeah, well, I think they would have a strong framework.
Still?
Yeah, I think like that's a non-negotiable at test level.
Okay. So this business that is unstructured, out you go, heads up kind of stuff.
No, I would think that's inaccurate, but what is accurate is basically so much of rugby nowadays is being comfortable in the chaos, as Stuart Lancaster talks about. But what you're trying to do is basically, for example, if you kick a box kick, you have to win that ball.
Mm.
But then the next phase is, it's not set up, if you understand me, the D is kind of scrambling.
It's the best way to almost unstructure a D.
Correct, but the other side of it then is that when you have every scrum possession, Joe, it's 16 people locked into a small space, which means that there's a huge space available, And that's probably a growth area that you could see that England didn't manipulate against France. France shut down England off scrum attack, but it's a huge opportunity. And Ireland, with Johnny there, would have great ideas around that, but we didn't see much of that at the weekend. But there was a tendency under Joe at times to see robotic rugby but they were still getting unbelievable results. But now, with that under Andy Farrell, I think what he backs his players to do is pick the right decision at the right moment, depending on the certain scenario. And he talked about flow, and I'm a big fan of flow, but it's hard to describe flow to a person who isn't in that flow mode. You just get you get it, Joe, from having a good tempo. But and the great example of that at the weekend was Dupont.
Yeah.
I think he judged the tempo of the game brilliantly. He knew when to put the foot in the accelerator. He knew when to probe around the A and B defender, both sides of the ruck. He knew when to hit into Mac. He knew when to search in behind to find territory.
That's feel, isn't it? That's correct. That's not experience, because he's not experienced. He's just feeling that.
Yeah, but he's felt it for. He has it.
Yeah.
You know, and Connor has it, but Connor's not in confidence.
Yeah, well, I'll come back to Connor in just 1 second. Too. I had an interesting press conference today with John Cooney. One last kind of overarching kind of question, if we touched on the attack there. Shane Horgan was an OTBAM with the lads this morning, and he's made this point about defence for about a year now, where he's looked at the English and Saracens' defence, you know, rushing up, putting pressure on the ball, and he feels the Irish defence is drifting a little bit and a bit soft. Okay, so that's a simplified version of what we're talking about here. What defence do you favour? Would you like to see that Irish defence coming up more in the mould of a Saracens and an England?
Well, I'm a big fan of that, of taking away the key attacking threats, time and space. So that's what my whole philosophy is based on.
You've been a 10 against those defences, so you know what it's like.
Yeah, but nowhere near the amount I've implemented in teams I've coached.
So it's moved on again?
Yeah. It has, and it will always keep moving on. And what is interesting now is that basically you have 7 backs, but you can position them anywhere.
Mm.
So in the last few games, we've kind of had police on going in to defend at 9 and playing at scrum half, and you've Tuaera Carabarlo, a really good defender, defending at first defender. So it depends what your policy is, Joe. You know, if an attacking team off a scrum with your 9, you can have 7 backs, but you can only have 4 defenders. So where's your confidence and where's your decision making in terms of, so if that's the case and you bring your blindside wing into attack, it means that you could go 8, 9.
Mm.
So including from the 9, you've 6 other attackers. That's a 7 against a 4.
You can't rush up on that.
4+, you can.
Can you?
You can.
Right.
And see, but that, how do you sell it to your players?
I would have thought, hang on, we're retreating here.
But then, but that's exactly.
I thought we were using the touchline there. We're pushing them out wide.
Then with the way the game has gone and how it's refereed, it's a possession game. So you leave teams come onto you. That's 20 metres over the gain line.
Mm.
Then they're into their flow.
And then you're scrambling.
Yeah. So if you can actually stop them anywhere near the gain line on the first phase or behind them, they have one phase to try and regather momentum, otherwise they nearly have to kick it.
So like, Andy Farrell's a shrewd thinker of the game, and he's worked in defence really all his coaching career. It's not like he's unaware that his son, for instance, plays in that type of defence. So he's seen it, he's looked at it, and he's thought, that's not quite for us. So there must be a value in what he's doing, and he must see a point in doing what he's doing.
I think the big exponent of watching the ball is Andy Farrell. So he's been a market leader in that.
Right.
That's his gig, and I was always a big fan of watching the ball, but in New Zealand it's nearly, you're blacklisted if you watch the ball. We defend pictures, is how they've been coached.
Right.
So why I'm kind of confident on this subject is that I had that project at club level in Racing with Dan Carter, Anthony Tutavaki, Casey Laulala and Joe Rakakoko, who are all disciples of Wayne Smith, and really use the touchline as their friend.
Mm.
But the game has kind of gone on a bit now where 80% of penalties are nearly against the defending team. So that's playing in your mind too as a coach, in terms of if this team has possession and they build phases, they're going to keep the scoreboard
ticking over.
You know?
Okay.
So
getting their faces.
And I had great conversations with the players about, well, you're trying to coach me at, you know, Joe Rakococo and Angie Tudaku and Casey into their early 30s to do something that they've never done.
Mm.
But they actually, it was such great feedback of their insecurities, the threats to them, how they felt. But then after a while, they just kind of go, oh, geez, I wish I heard this. I got this earlier in my career. And that's not talking ball watching up. It was just because you've always done something, and the Wayne Smith of up and out and connecting was brilliant.
Mm.
But now the game has kind of, with the size of bodies and with attacking threats, very hard to get the ball back.
Mm. Okay. Well, I guess we'll see how it, I mean, we've got to see how it goes.
Well, exactly, because it's different too, because you've, you know what I mean, there's set-piece defence,
sure,
which you're very organised on, but off-phase defence, there's another opportunity to tinker with things, in the fact that, you know what I mean, anywhere the ball is near the touchline and you've only a one-sided attack, where Lancaster tries to create the 70-30 and 60-40 in his phase game, that means that you have a two-sided attack, so you can go both ways.
Right.
It challenges the defence big time, and the only time you can have line speed is when you're secure and you've your spacing right, and you can get off the line.
Okay.
But it's harder than you think if you watch the ball and you come up hard, 7-on-4.
I'm sure it is.
You
I'm
know?
Sure, I'm sure it is. I'm sure you can look very silly. Cooney and Murray were put forward for a press conference today. Like, what an interesting...
Yeah, great.
Is it great? The cynic in me looked at that and said, well, they're off the back of an underwhelming performance. The media have gathered.
I don't know where they're back.
Let me for a second. Okay, wasn't an amazing performance for sure.
No.
Let's distract everyone by giving them Cooney and Murray. That's a juicy thing to write about tomorrow. And that will take away a little bit from the performance.
I don't think in anyone's head, though, let's get them something to write about tomorrow. I think Andy Farrell isn't thinking that.
You don't? What's his thinking then with Cooney and Murray?
I think in getting a performance out of his team on Saturday, the most important thing as a coach, and, you know, they wake up Sunday, they're happy, Joe.
Yeah, and how does Cooney and Murray today help at performance?
Because I think what is more and more obvious, these guys need to work together. This is a 23-man job.
What would Sexton and O'Gara have said if you were told you're going forward for a press conference?
I would be pretty sure we did something together.
At the time where, because this is at the beginning of this Murray.
No, at the time we wouldn't share a bedroom.
Correct. So this is at the start of the Murray-Cooney rivalry. This is not towards
this
the
is,
end.
This is different.
I know it's
two
a bit 30 different.
Year olds.
What age were you?
I was 30, Johnny was probably 22.
So you should have known better.
Yeah, but you've got two of the most stubborn people ever to play the game.
Well, that's true. But they seemed, in fairness today, I haven't seen it yet, but I just rang someone who was at it and... because we're talking here not long after it, and the general word was they were very mature about it and it was fine, and look, we've known each other a long time and best for the team and all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure it was fine, but it's an interesting dynamic all the same.
Yeah, it is, but it keeps coming back to what's best for the team.
And what is best for the team on Saturday? Murray again?
For me, yes. I think... I kind of know the character well. I think there is going to be a reaction.
People said that before Saturday, though.
Yeah, but you know, Joe, he hasn't had a pack in front of him for Munster for winning collisions. The ball hasn't been really quick. There's a big step up from playing for Munster, playing for Ireland in a Six Nations game. Do not underestimate that. And am I completely biased? I am.
Sure.
You know, but that's, I think, no problem stating that, but I think knowing him very well and knowing his game, I think maybe up to now he mightn't have appreciated that his position was under threat. I think he realises now that this noise isn't going away.
Mm.
Cooney is coming after him, coming hard.
You've made the point before, you saw a game recently where you thought Cooney's game management certainly could be improved upon. That's in your thoughts as well?
Well, the game against Claremont over there, it tests you. That's a brilliant stadium for aspiring test players.
Yeah.
Because it's everyone against you, and Para is your opposite man, and he's a good barometer. But yeah, I was probably unnecessarily harsh against him that day, but I was looking to pick holes in his performance that day, and I found a few. But I thought he was very, very composed on Saturday.
Mm.
Very composed. And I think, you know, if he keeps going what he's, or if he keeps doing what he's doing, unless Connor changes or finds that extra percentage he needs to, there will be a change.
Gary Ringrose is out. He'll be back for the Italian game. So it's most likely Henshaw and Aki, presumably. People have said how
I'm
much...
I'm not too sure about that.
Are you not?
No. I'd be interesting where they play Keith Durrells. So for me, he's a guaranteed in the seven. Non-negotiable. He plays when he's fit.
Mm-hmm.
He's earned the right to do that. You know, could they go Aki and Earls? I think would be a lovely foil. I like this. You know, I mean, Earls running lines off his offloads.
Okay.
Very interesting. His acceleration is better than anyone's in the Irish squad. You might see Addison at 15, and you might see Larmer onto the wing.
Right. Well, that maybe ties in with my next question. When you talk about Earls and lines of running, you know this back three. So they're like full of talent, and Larmer, and Stockdale, and be it Conway or Earls. I'm sure at times they need to hold their width and not be close together. But we'd love to see them almost running around each other and giving it and getting it back and throw a blanket over them at times and really tearing teams apart as a unit. Because I look at Larmer, he gets the ball and he does it on his own a little bit and it's great. Stockdale feels like an individual to me at times. Earl's sometimes doing great stuff on his own in the wing. Are we facilitating them getting together? A little gang forming and kind of ripping teams apart
in
places?
To explain this accurately, I think when you have your wingers high in the defensive line, your 15 is isolated, which means they're not really in that much of a... So they're cutting off the running threat by being high, so they're going to kick, and it's either probably the 9 as a second wave of defence and Larmer on his own at the back covering all the space.
Okay. Really. So in those moments, it's hard for them
to join. I agree with you. In attack, I think there is definitely scope for playing, for getting a second touch. Yeah, I think there is absolutely huge scope in that regard, either off a 30-metre blind side, or else playing same way, or else having, if you play a roving role, if you understand me, with your winger, like Larmer, Stockdale and Earls are deadly at that.
And they would love to do it.
Well, you look at Rathay's try.
Yeah.
You know, that's just kind of a smart winger who has got his timing right, but he's obviously given a bit of a free roll when we get into the opposition 22 to you trail the 9 or you play inside 10.
Did you teach him that?
No. that's his innate ability as a winger.
On him, people might be interested, because I want to get a quick word on England as well, and then last word on Wales coming, because I know you've got to run out the door. Rada is interesting. What does he weigh?
72 kgs.
Has he been under pressure to put on weight at La Rochelle? Has he ever looked at him and said, you need more?
No, because I see him, like, his bone structure is small. So, like, I think what you look for is basically, is he comfortable in his skin? Yes, he is. He's the happiest, go lucky person you've ever met. He's always in good form. He's always recipient to constructive feedback.
Mm-hmm.
He plays with a smile. He has a go. And you could see that he lost a few balls in contact in the second half, which would have disappointed him.
Mm.
But his capacity to beat the first defender every time is very, very interesting. So, obviously, it worked out well for them. He would be in the reserve 15, and Anthony Boutier played well, very well yesterday.
Okay.
And Rat is kind of... He's the kind of reserve winger and the reserve 15 and got promoted to start.
Chance, yeah. What did you make of England? Obviously minus the Vunipolas and then Tuilagi goes off. So they're clearly a different team without that kind of head.
They're a different team, but I think what they'll be bitterly disappointed will be their error rate.
Yeah, like the Owen Farrell knock-ons.
As you said, you know, like for two, twice in a game for him to take his eye off the ball is bizarre. He's such a, at worst, he's such a steady Eddie.
Yeah.
You know?
Baseline level, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. How do you, can you make sense of what they produced yesterday?
Well, that's just also what happens. Even the great, when they get rattled, they come up with errors. And that's why it's, you know, so fascinating for people to keep going watching sport, because like, if you ask me before the game, there's no way you pick out Farrell for two errors like that, you know?
Mm. There's no obvious reason for it. I mean, it's easy to say World Cup hangover or the Saracens business, but I mean, it's almost a mystery, really, how they...
I read this morning, history shows that the team that loses the World Cup final the following season has a massive hangover.
I would believe it.
Yeah.
Can you imagine trying to get motivated for, by comparison, a Six Nations after you...
Do you know what, though? But you get it. For anyone like going to... One of the great moments in sport is I've had to stop myself singing along to the Marseillaise in Stade de France, because it's an anthem that's in you from a kid from watching the French teams gotten down over the years.
Sure.
And I used to have one of my good school buddies who always ring me when the French national anthem was on. So it was a bit of a running joke, but it, like, 80,000 people.
It's too late then, though, Ronan.
Against,
like,
you.
If their preparation has been off because there's a hangover about the place, it's too late when La Marseillaise comes on to flick the switch, I would have thought.
No, of course it is, but like, your preparation is building all week. But you say a hangover from a World Cup, like, as a competitor, it's all well and good doing, producing the goods at home. Great players do it away from home.
Mm.
And that was always a kind of a driving force of some of the teams we played in. And Stade de France, 80,000 people. It was a great atmosphere yesterday. You take serious, serious pride in your individual performance by going out there and actually performing against them. Because, but it proved too much for England, and
It gets very interesting now to see if it is
the score. Killer score. It wasn't the 17-0. It was the 24 when Dupont's moment of magic for Olivon.
Yeah.
It just put it too far, because, as you said, if there was another 5 minutes, there was only one team scoring.
Mm. Final question then. Wales coming to Dublin. This Irish team feel a bit vulnerable right now.
Why?
Well, we have a team that haven't shaken off a lot of the ills of 2019 based on the performance over the weekend. We have an out-half who, yes, scored 19 points, but we're so reliant on him and his body right now. We have Murray trying to regain the form he needs. We have question marks over a few others. We have a new management team finding their feet. They haven't had much time with the players. And you have Wales, okay, admittedly against Italy, but 42 points on the board. They'll be feeling good.
Yeah, they'll be feeling really good. And Alwyn Jones.
So that's the vulnerability, I would think.
Yeah, well, you've made a very good point there.
Right.
And I wasn't challenging that. I just wanted for you to spell it out for me. But it depends, again, what your mindset is and whether you go with it as an opportunity or is it daunting.
Where do you think this Irish team is at?
It's trying to find its stride.
Mm.
Is where it's at, I think. And they haven't, for good reason, found it for well over a year. So all the question marks are out there. But if you keep telling them that it's daunting, then they'll probably start believing that.
Mm.
And I'm not sitting on the fence, but I think you gotta inspire these guys to, you know, if Ireland get a win against Wales, it'll change everything. Even if it's like the weekend, I think we should be probably grateful that it could have been a defeat. And imagine the mood now.
Mm.
Small margins, you know what I mean? And small things become the big things when you do them well. But, you know, it's probably Wales' favourites for the weekend. But who cares?
Mm.
We've 80 minutes, but as opposed to 2018, there's question marks everywhere. When we were on top of our game and there was flow, the weeks flew.
Mm.
Now it's a team that, as you say, it's pretty patched up from the weekend, and any more injuries or underperformances will erode confidence levels more.
Mm. Okay. Interesting times. So our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, Everyone In, Ronan O'Gara. Pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you, John.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us, Everyone In.